So Ngapsia, can you please read for us Genesis 38?
Genesis
1 to 11. We continue our series of studies on Christian ethics, and this evening we come to study number 16 on contraception. And study 16, if you have been following every study week by week, study 16 will in a sense be quite advanced in already in the study. There are about four more studies to complete this series. We are going to cover things like drug taking, alcoholism. We are going to consider things like cremation and so on in before we finish off. So there will be 20 studies altogether, God willing. But by covering up to study 16, those of you who are students, you know that nowadays, using the semester system, each semester on the average is 16 weeks. And every week you have 1 hour of studies, so you actually cover one semester of a one credit hour course. So it's quite something. And of course, we have no assignments and things like that for you to do, but otherwise it will be a complete one credit hour course. So that's study number 16 on contraception. Now, questions we want to seek to answer include the following. Is it right for Christians to use birth control methods to limit the number of children? And how many children is the right number for a Christian couple? Is it right not to have children at all? Is it right not to limit the number of children? That means you continue multiplying for as long as you're able. Now, what factors and or principles should determine the type of birth control if we agree that it is permissible? Now, some Christians have strong views about these questions. The majority are largely ignorant about this, and they just follow the examples of their peers. So those they interact with, what they do, they just follow. And others seek the advice of so-called mature Christians in their churches. And of course, depending on whether the church holds to a position on this question of contraception, you will discover that the people will have their own views. Otherwise, they will follow the church's view. But if the church doesn't teach any view, and sometimes these type of subtopics are not covered, and it's not the church doesn't hold any view at all, then people are left in the dark, and people just fumble around, and people just adopt their own views wherever they can get help or advice from. Now, contraception refers to methods of preventing conception. So conception, contra to conception, is contraception. So contraception refers to methods of preventing conception in a woman who is fertile and sexually active. So in other words, the person is married and capable of producing children. So do we advocate methods to prevent fertility or prevent conception at any period of time? So basically, sexual relationship is allowed only in marriage. So others might believe differently. Non-believers just live in without getting married, but that is their business, you see. But for us, if we want to be biblical Christians, we reserve the sexual relationship to marriage. We don't engage in sexual relationship outside of marriage. Sometimes people are not careful, they have sexual relationship outside of marriage, and sometimes they get pregnant, sometimes they do not. But the point is that we want to do what is right, we encourage our people to do what is right, and the temptation can be very strong, but the point is still that we want to do what is right. So we refer therefore to those who are married. So in those who are married, they are sexually active and they might not want to have children immediately, or they want to space out the number of children, and contraception will have to be considered. Contraception therefore is meant for married people to regulate or limit the number of children they intend to have. So there are two main sections in this talk. In the first section, we have biblical teaching on the family, and the second section, principles and factors affecting contraception. So let us consider the first section, biblical teaching on the family. We are very clear from the Bible that children are a gift from God. From the very beginning, we know that God blesses married people with children. And children are described as a heritage from the Lord. Psalm 127, verse 3 to 5. And let us look at this psalm, because it is a very powerful statement of the blessedness of having children. We are told in verse 3 of Psalm 127, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." Now the picture used of speaking with their enemies in the gate means that they are like leaders of the community. In those days, people live in walled up cities. During the day, the city gates will be open and the people will go out of the city to their farms. Then at night, they will come back and the city gates will be closed. And during the day, when the city gates are open, people are coming in and out. And seated at the side of the city gates would be the judge, so the elders of the city. So when people have court cases, they will come to the elders there to be judged. So in other words, this is a picture of those who have many sons, and some of them rise to be leaders of the community. So they take places, their respective places in society. So this is to show how blessed it is. So like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. So you have more children, it is like arrows, you know? So you feel secure, and when enemies come, you have your arrow, bow and arrows ready. And if you have a quiver full of them, you shoot at one, it misses, but you still have other arrows to use. And so how many arrows have to be in the quiver to make it full? So people say at the minimum 5 arrows, see? So otherwise anything less than 5 arrows is shaky and you can't say it is full. So at least 5 arrows you can say reasonably full. Maybe you can squeeze in 10, well, very tight. So you have 10 arrows. So by looking at this sum like that, you can roughly guess how many children you should have if you want to be truly blessed, okay? So, and it is described as a crown to the aged, say the man who is a white hair, who has grandchildren, well, you know, it is a blessing. Then in Luke chapter 1, verse 42, having a child is a blessing from God. And this is in reference to the case of the one who was unable to bear children. If you look at Luke chapter 1, verse 7, there was a case of Elizabeth. We are told that they were, starting from verse 5, well, there was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah. His wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth, and they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well advanced in years. So they were godly people. They couldn't have a child right up to old age. That means they have given up on trying to have a child. But you see, they were still walking in a godly way before the Lord. You see, that shows to us that children are not necessary to make the family complete. But of course, when children are given, it is a blessing. And in this case, if you look at verse 24 of that chapter, you discover God appeared to them. Now, after those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she hid herself 5 months, saying, "Thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among people." So the reproach is more among the people. In many cultures, childlessness is looked upon as something that is not so blessed. So it is not just in Jewish culture, it is also in many cultures, even in our part of the world. And sometimes family members can be very cruel, you see. For example, a daughter-in-law is married in, the mother-in-law is very cruel, and then they use expression like, you see, you know, a mother hen that cannot lay egg, you know. You see, you hear that expression, that type of expression. It's very hurting to the daughter-in-law to use that type of language. But Christians should see that the children are not a must. You know, it does not mean that you will be blessed with children. Although you can expect blessing, but you don't demand it from God. So remember that God is God who is very full of His blessing. He wants to shower His people with blessing. One of the blessing He showers His people with is children. And therefore, if this is the blessing of God, then we should accept children as really a blessing, and we should be very thankful. There are some individuals who say, I don't like children, you see, so at the most I will have one. Now that type of attitude is contrary to the spirit of the Bible. The Bible shows to us that children are the gifts of God to you, and it's a blessing, and therefore you should be very thankful. And instead of limiting the number of children or be reluctant to have children, you see, that is contrary to the spirit of the Bible. Instead, we should be very thankful for children. Huh? And then remember, this began at creation, and it was a mandate given to mankind, not just to believers, but to mankind. We are told in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. And therefore this mandate continues. This is a general rule. So there are many cases of barren women who did not complain, who were bullied by those who had children, who were despised by others, but God never despised people without children. It is God's sovereignty that some people do not have children for good reasons. And in the case of Sarah, she did not have child until old age, and then God wanted to show forth His glory and gave him a son, Isaac. And Sarah therefore was mother to Isaac, who was going to be the one who inherited the covenant blessing that God gave to Abraham. So Abraham, Isaac, then Jacob, then his 12 sons. So this blessing was going to be passed down to the nation of Israel until the Savior comes in the person of Jesus Christ. So God had a purpose in not giving Sarah a child until she was of old age, and God's glory was manifested there. And similarly, Rebecca did not have children at first. And some people are not aware of this, but if you study the Bible carefully, you look at Genesis 25, you see that Rebecca was without child at first. Genesis 25 verse 21, we are told, now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebecca his wife conceived. Yeah. Then another example was Rachel. It seems that to run in the family, that family seemed to have difficulty having children, right? But each time they pleaded with the Lord opened the womb of the wives. So Genesis chapter 30, verse 22, you know the story well, that there was unhealthy rivalry between the two wives of Jacob. And of course, we want to qualify ourselves. The Bible never approved of more than one wife. More than one wife is not taught in the Bible as something approved by God. But the culture of that time, the influence of the people around them, resulted in some of the godly people marrying more than one wife. And God did not approve of it, but God tolerated it. So tolerating a practice is different from approving of the practice, okay? God had a higher purpose to fulfill through His people, so He did not deal with their sins at first. But today, the Bible is complete and we are clear that one man is to have one wife at any one time. Similarly, a woman has to have one husband at any one time. Unless the spouse passed away, then you remarry, then you can say you have a second wife or third wife, but it is not at the same time. It is when one wife passes away, then you have another. Okay? So in the case of this Jacob, the two wives were like competing with one another, and Rachel, the wife he loved, was without child. But finally, Rachel called out to God, and God listened to her and opened her womb, we are told in verse 22 of chapter 30. And she conceived and bore a son. God has taken away my reproach. So the reproach was not from God, you must remember. The reproach was from the people around her. See, God would have accepted her without children, but since she was feeling so miserable and she called out to God for help, God answered her and opened her womb, and she conceived and had a son. And later she was going to have another son. So these are all examples of people who at first were without children, and they were blessed by God with children subsequently. The case of Hannah in 1 Samuel is also striking, in that Hannah was again one person who was despised by the other wife of this Elkanah. And so what happened is she was constantly going to the tabernacle area to pray, and she was always very sad that she did not have a child of her own. And finally God answered her prayer and opened her womb, and she finally had a son, and then she gave the son to the Lord to serve him in the tabernacle. She subsequently have other children. Then the other example is found in the New Testament, which we have looked at already, in the case of Elizabeth, the wife of Zacharias, the priest. They were godly people, but without child. And in her old age, God miraculously gave her a child. And she hid herself for a while until the child was ready to be born. So all in all, from all this teaching on the children being a blessing from God, and that those who were without child were miserable because of the pressures put upon them, they prayed and God blessed them with child. So from this we learn that it is right and natural for married couples to desire children. It is not our right, on the other hand, to demand for children from God, or to demand to have normal children. So you have children, how do you know that it will be a normal child? Hey, who gave you the right to demand from God? See, God has no need to give you any child, and God has no need to give you a normal child. See, and that is why every time that you have a normal child, you should be very, very thankful. And I believe that Christians who fail to see children as the gift of God have failed to be thankful enough all these years. Now, think back of the years, see, that we have been blessed and we have not been thankful enough for the children God gave to us. See? Now, the next question is, how many children are needed to constitute being fruitful? Earlier, from Psalm 127, we get an idea that the man who is blessed with children has a quiver full, like arrows, a quiver full of arrows. So as mentioned earlier, roughly five arrows would make the quiver quite full. So generally people say, you know, aim for four or five children, you know, and even six children if you can. But nowadays the trend is more towards having fewer children in our part of the world. In other parts of the world, people are still having more children. But others, for religious reasons and other reasons, they just keep multiplying. So, and we will consider some Christian cases as we go along. So take note, we are determining how many would constitute a blessing from God. So as in gospel work, it is God who gives the increase. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6, Paul argues that he planted, Apollos watered, but God is the one who gives the increase. So who are we to quarrel about how much fruit we have? So fruit in gospel work is given by God. Sometimes some people are very faithful and they're full of zeal and they are powerful preachers and they do everything and they are very prayerful and the church is very supportive, and yet there are very few converts. It depends on the ground the seed is sown in. The missionary C.R. Marsh went to the Republic of Chad in Africa for years. He ministered there, but there were so very few converts. There was hardly any convert at all. Then later on, he went to Morocco. Again, there was few converts there. It was only around about the time when he retired that converts began to come in. Then as he retired, news began to come in that the Sikh had increased and others were beginning to come to faith, you see. So he began to receive news after his retirement that there were fruit to his labor. So it is not up to us to determine how much fruit we have, although we must have fruit. No farmer will just farm without having fruit. But how fruitful we are is up to God to give. And in a parable of the sower, fruitfulness varies from 100-fold to 60-fold and to 30-fold. None of them were condemned. See? So some are 100-fold, some are 60-fold, some are 30-fold. See? But all of them are mentioned in a positive light that the fruitfulness indicates the genuineness of faith. See? So by basing it on Psalm 127 and also this teaching in the New Testament, a general rule may be made that it is more blessed to have more children. But on the other hand, it would be irresponsible to have too many children such that the health of the mother is affected, see, or service to the Lord is hindered. And how may service to the Lord be hindered? You just think through and who knows. You see, we can have some discussion afterwards, but the point is that sometimes you have to think. Now, one possible example is given of that of missionaries who are serving in the mission field. Yeah? And it might not be appropriate at that period of time to have children or too many children. Yeah? Now, some Christians of the Pedo-Baptist persuasion believe in producing so-called covenant children. They believe that all children born to believers are automatically saved. They are members of the church unless proven otherwise. See? Now, because of their belief, they therefore produce many children. Yeah? And generally, they know that there are other Christians, good Christian people who differ from them on this belief. And generally, we have to say that they are mature enough not to scorn, post-scorn, to disdain other believers. It would be wrong for them to be scornful of other Christians who don't hold to their view. See? But equally, it is not for us to criticize them for producing so many children. So in such families, generally, you see 7, 8, 9, 10 children, they say they will produce because they believe in producing covenant children for the Lord. So all children born to believers, to them, are members of the Church of Christ. So why not increase the number of believers? Yeah, they claim, see? But we don't believe in that, see? We say that salvation is of the Lord. So just because parents are believers does not automatically mean that all their children will be saved. Although if we use the rightful means such as praying for their salvation, nurturing them in the fear of the Lord, setting the good example, bringing them to church and so on, God generally uses these means to bless us with children who are converted. See? And you see that some godly people, they don't have children who are converted. See? Maybe out of 5 children, only 1 or 2 is converted. So it grieves their parents' heart to see that their children are still not converted even when they are adult already. See? Really, you know, we know of many cases. So there is a missionary couple, for example, whose son went astray, you know, he really went wild, you know, and, you know, yeah, gave so much heartache. And one day the missionary was with us here, and when I happened to just ask casually, how are your children, you see, because in earlier occasion this has been raised, wow, he began to pour himself out, and he was so agitated, he's saying, yeah. So he was all covered up in his heart. He was visiting and he was not going to show forth his anguish, the anguish of heart, until when asked. So when asked, he just opened up and then he showed forth how pained he was over the wayward son, who is an adult who have married and remarried and who followed another religion, and, you know, causing the parents so much heartache. See, now that can happen. So therefore, from young, make sure that you really bring your children before the Lord and pray for their salvation. Put that as topmost priority. Bring them to church, come to Sunday school, at home have family worship, teach them to memorize scriptures, set a good example for them, say, discipline them as needed out of love, say, and if you love them wrongly and don't discipline them, they are likely to go astray. Say. So all these are used by God to as means to bring our children to faith. And don't be surprised, therefore, the parents who are conscientious and anxious and constantly bringing their children before the Lord, they will be blessed with children who are converted. Say, yes, say, we can expect that God will bless. But remember, it's not our right to demand. Say, God, why don't you give us children? And then you can demand, God, why can't all our children be converted? The question is, in the first place, have you prayed enough for your children? Have you disciplined them enough? Have you taught them enough, guided them enough? Have you set a good example for them? You see, so we take note that we disagree with the Pedo-Baptist view, but nevertheless, we still treat children as a gift of God, and therefore, the more that we can have, the more blessed we are. But don't be irresponsible to the extent that we have too many children and we are unable to cope with the number of children, then that would not be right, okay? Now, other factors should be considered. For example, the circumstances of your life, your health, your finance, etc. As an example, a missionary couple might want to limit the number of children because of hazards in the mission field, see? So, you imagine what it is like in difficult terrain, mountainous terrain, jungle situation, desert situation, and with dangers around, and then missionaries have to take care of 6 or 7 children at one go, you know, and at the same time wanting to preach the gospel. So missionaries might want to limit the number of children in such a situation to just 1 or 2 for that period of time, and while they actively serve in the mission field. So that is their choice, how many children they will have and whether they can cope and they can serve the Lord well. That would be up to them to decide. But this is one example where of a situation where circumstances might cause the couple to limit the number of children, at least for that period of time. A couple who are both carriers of thalassemia B, as an example, might decide not to have children but opt for adoption instead. Normally, if one parent is a carrier doesn't manifest the disease. See? But if the one parent is a carrier and the other partner, he gets mad, let us say the woman, generally is the woman who are more the carriers of thalassemia B, but some men can carry thalassemia B as well. So let us say they fall in love and then soon they want to get married and soon they begin to share about their lives, and that is the right thing to do. You don't hide things until after marriage, then you reveal it so that you don't lose your husband or you lose your wife. You see, our love requires that we reveal whatever that needs to be revealed, and in that way we can discuss and see what can be done. Well, and if there is genuine love, then the couple can still get married, but you think of a way out of the situation, see? But if the person rejects you, then you know, you begin to question, you know, you begin to wonder, you know, in the first place, you know, did he really love me enough to want to have me? Now, he knows this problem, he rejects me, see? Maybe he has strong enough reason to reject, maybe he wants to be a missionary somewhere, he doesn't want to be hampered by problems of any sort, or there might be good reasons, see? But on the other hand, you might feel relieved that, oh, at least I find out now, although it is painful to be rejected at this stage, but at least better to find out now rather than too late, you see? So you see, God has his ways of you know, blessing us sometimes in a painful way, but in the long run, it's a blessing, see? So let us come back to this couple who are carriers of thalassemia B. Just like in the previous talk, you see, where color blindness is passed down, if the chromosomes that determine the sex of the person, in a man is YY, in a woman is XY, you see? So combined together, you see, there are four possible combinations, XX and XY, you see? So you can have produce four possibilities, XX, and then and another XX, and then XY and YX, you see? So the likelihood of a carrier is something like one in four without being not being a carrier, and then one in four being a carrier. One in four being someone who gets manifests the disease, and two who are both carriers. That combination, you see, that means the likelihood of having carriers and having one manifesting the disease is so much more than one who is free of the being a carrier. Yeah. So only one out of the four is totally free from the being a carrier. Then two are carriers and one is manifesting the disease. So being so high likelihood, people generally do not want to have children. Yeah. And of course, there are other ways of seeking help with the possibility of perhaps, you know, the methods of that we have studied in our previous study about, you know, the various methods of having such as IVF and things like that. We must be careful not to use methods that in vitro fertilization that destroys fertilized eggs and so on. We don't use those. But there are other methods that might be perhaps attempted, you see, such as introducing the sperm cell directly into the womb of the wife, you see, and as long as it is not from donors but from the husband, you see, those are possibilities. But the point is that any attempt at selection that results in the fertilized eggs being destroyed, we would not use. And in the case of thalassemia, it is often extremely difficult at the present stage of technology to be able to have your own child that is free from being a carrier or free from the disease. And you have to meet with someone who have the disease to understand what a painful thing it is, quite a burden, you see. We have known a couple of cases, and in one case there was the daughter who is manifesting the disease. And the daughter was very pretty daughter, but very pale, you see, because thalassemia B is a disease that affects the red blood cells, so the red blood cell is not properly formed, and therefore the immune system goes down. So very prone to disease, see? So what happened is the daughter, a small size, pretty girl, see, and she has to go in every week for injection through the stomach, you know, to help in the immune system. And normally the child can survive only up to 20s or so, but seldom they live very long. And so what a painful thing it was. We know the father, and it's people like that, they for years, you know, by the time we knew about the daughter was already in the late teens. Nearly time for her to consider going overseas to study. So they were wondering what to do with a daughter like that. So we have prayed with them, but it's really tough for them, for the parents, you know. So if they had known, they would not have children. But they didn't know. So they have a child like that. So a situation like this might cause the parents to decide not to have children. Instead, they might consider adoption. Then another case is a woman who had a cesarean section, and the doctors would say, please don't have another child, because the place where the sewing, the cutting was done, you see, generally it's just below the navel line there, you see, they cut and sew back. So when you have another child, the stretching will affect the weakened part. And at the most, you can just have one more. If you have another, the doctor will begin to scold you, you know. Yeah, why are you so irresponsible? You want to risk your life, you see. So in situations like that, they might have to limit the number of children, okay? Then another factor to notice, to take note of, is the age of the mother. It might be a limiting factor. Scientifically, it is known that a woman's risk of conceiving a child with Down syndrome increases after 35 years of age. So don't panic, those who are looking for the right person to get married to, you have prayed, see, but your ears are coming along, so you begin to worry. But let me explain, listen, understand carefully, don't panic. Okay? So generally, we would advise that the ladies don't get married too late. Nowadays, because of the lifestyle, people want to finish their studies, and they study high, study well, they go to universities. By the time they finish, they are 25, 26. By the time they settle to get a job, then they are pursuing their career. Then they claim that they are more ready now to seek for a life partner. You see, by the time they seek for a life partner, see, they are reaching close to age 30. See, then age 30, you discover that if you want to have children by age 35, the safe period, because beyond age 35, the likelihood of Mongolism increases. So a woman conceiving at age 25 has a likelihood of only 1 in 1,250 having a Down syndrome. That means it's very unlikely to have Down syndrome if you have a child early. Okay? Then it's still quite safe, 25, 26, 27, until you arrive at age 35. See? By the time you arrive at age 35, the likelihood is 1 in 100. That means in 100 of cases, in 100 women who have children at age 35, one out of 100 will have a Mongoloid child. See? And of course, if you marry late, you can still attempt to have a child, and since if around about 30 to 40, around about that period, of course, as the years go by, the likelihood increases, but it is still below the 50%. So you can still attempt to have a child, but you wouldn't want to have too many children, you see, because as you go on, the likelihood increases of having Mongolism, you see. So all in all, what we want to say is that if you take that into consideration, your cutoff point is age 35, 36, like that. So let us say you begin to have children from age 30. How many children do you want to have? See, if you want to have 5, you can hardly make it. You have to rush. See, so we don't need to hide the fact that for our case, you see, we married at that time at age 27. See, by the time we settle down and begin to have a child, we were 29, 30. See, and at that, before marriage, we already discussed how many children we wanted. So I wanted 5, my wife wanted 4. Okay? So I say, oh, okay, there's no need to quarrel over it. Uh-huh. Because to arrive at 5, I have to arrive at 4 first. So some people were surprised, hey, you know, you have one child after another so quickly. Well, but the time is short for us. So we joke with people and say, time and tide wait for no man. In the matter of raising a family, we wait for no man. But they didn't know our reasoning. Our reasoning is because we are aiming at 4 or 5. See? So by the time we settle, we are 29. We wanted to have children already. Settle means that we came back from overseas, we looked for a job, then we look for a house to rent, and by the time we were settled in our own family, we wanted to have family, to have children already. We were close to 29 already. So 29 to 35, you see, we have no time to waste already. We have a child, and then the child is weaned, then we want to have another child, and then that's why the gap between them is only 1.5 years, 1.5 years, because we can't waste time anymore. So why stop at 4? You all know the story. I was taken away at the pleasure of the government at that time for a year. And then by the time we came back, we wasted 1 year in there. And by the time I came back, you see, we could have only one more. So God gave us the answer, 4. I wanted 5, but God gave us the answer, 4. You see, because by the time we have the fourth one, by the time he was weaned, my wife was already coming to 36. You see, so that's how we determine. Okay? And I incorporated all this into marriage counseling nowadays. You see, because many people are ignorant of all this or never thought of all this, and therefore they wasted years. They say they want to have freedom without children, get to know one another in a married life first, 1 year, 2 years pass. Then as 1 or 2 years pass by, then they start begin to have children. So they try and try, why can't have the child for another year? That means 2 years you didn't have child, then third year you try, and for 3 years you don't have children. Then you realize something is not quite right, you have to seek professional help. Then you go to see the doctor, then the doctor will try to prescribe certain things to help you, you know. And by the time you have the first child, it might be 4 or 5 years after marriage. You're wasting so much time, you foolish people. You didn't realize that you wanted so much to have children, but you know, you wasted 4 or 5 years. So this has to be taught, this has to be made aware to the couple, and the decision is finally theirs. But we thought that to be helpful to them, these matters have to be raised with them. Okay? Now, a woman, next point, a woman remains fertile until after menopause. Menopause occurs about at age 50, that means from late 40s onwards to early 50s, that period of time. See, that is the menopause period. So generally, on the average, it is around about age 50 when the menstruation stops. You know that a woman has menstruation period, the period will come, you see. So then that means what happened is, you see, we mustn't assume everybody knows. So for young people, you have to learn all this. See, the boys and girls mature around about roughly the same time. Girls generally faster. Girls mature around about 10 or 11 years old. Boys mature around about, they reach poverty around about 12. So boys tend to be 1 or 2 years slower. Okay? And boys, when they reach poverty, you know, their nipples become hard, you know, liquid produced, hair begins to appear itchy and armpit and then their private area, you see. So then at night they have ejaculation, at first they might be surprised and shocked, you know, why is my pyjamas is sticky like that, you know. See, so if parents don't along the way incorporate this into their teaching, raising up their children, the child begins to think that he's having health problems or what. He gets frightened for a period of time, see, until he discovers from his schoolmates and they also have the similar issues, see. So we would our approach is that every evening we have family worship. So after reading the Bibles, singing a hymn, reading the Bible and praying, then we have 5 or 10 minutes sitting around just talking about the day, you know. Then if there's nothing to talk about, I would raise issues. Yeah? So issues like this would along the way be raised and be made known to them, see, so that they know. Yeah? Then for girls, what happened is that when poverty is arrived at, the girl goes to the bathroom and then suddenly there's flow of blood, you see. The girls get so worried, is again, you know, unnecessary fear comes to her. Yeah? Whereas if you have been preparing the girl, your daughter along the way, at least she knows. Okay? Now what happened is this, from poverty onwards, then there will be this cycle, generally roughly a month, but generally a bit shorter, something like 25 days, 96 days, the period will come. Period will come means that the body system is such that the womb of the female, of the woman, the ovary on both sides, there are ovaries inside there producing the eggs are produced there. Then the egg will come down, normally one, say, or the other, say one during the fertile period, and the womb will be coated with membrane that is ready for the fertilized egg. So if the married couple, the sperm cell enters and fertilizes the egg, then the egg will attach itself to the wall so that there's nutrient and then the baby will develop, you see. But if the person is not married and the egg just come down, then the it's not fertilized. So what happened is that that membrane that's ready to receive a fertilized egg, after a few days, it gets old, so it's discharged as blood and tissue like that, you see. So the discharge there is the period, you see. So when it first occurs, the young girl might be so frightened, yeah, why is there blood flow, you see. So what happened is that for the rest of her life until the menopause, this will happen, you see. There will be fertile period, then there will be the flushing out, then there will be a period of non-fertile, that is not fertile, then there is a cycle, it builds up again. So roughly every month there is a cycle, a period, you see. So when the woman reaches around about age 45 onwards, now, and on the average around about age 50, you know, see, the menopause occurs when the period doesn't occur anymore, you see. That means the body system, the hormones and so on, is such that the older person stops being fertile. So the time comes when menopause is over, and generally, I checked it up, generally the recommendation is don't assume you wouldn't have a child after menopause. You must wait a period of 12 consecutive months of not having period, then you can assume that you are safe. Otherwise, you might still need contraception in case you have a child when you do not want to. Okay, eh? So that is what happens after menopause, 12 months after not having having their periods, then from then on you are no more fertile. See? And furthermore, a woman who is breastfeeding will naturally be infertile for the first 6 months after giving birth to the baby. And the baby is feeding, breastfeeding. See? And it has to be regular breastfeeding. If it's irregular, there's no guarantee that in the first 6 months you wouldn't get pregnant. Yeah? But otherwise, if there's constant breastfeeding, as most mothers would feed their babies, if there's breastfeeding continuously throughout the 6 months, you see, you can be quite safe. Then beyond that, you're quite safe if the first breastfeeding continues regularly. But what happens is that often it is that it becomes less regular, and soon you are beginning to give semi-solids, or you are giving formula milk so that the baby is not so reliant on the mother's milk. Yeah? And that is the time when you must be careful. You think you are still breastfeeding, the milk is still flowing, but it's no more that regular. One day you discover, hey, your period seems to be coming back. Then you know for sure that although you are still breastfeeding, because the breastfeeding has not been regular, now your infertility period is over. So you are likely to get pregnant. Yeah? So if you don't want to have a child too early, the baby is still small, you will need contraception to prevent conception at that time. Yeah? But our interest here at this point is, what does the Bible say about contraception? The Bible does not say directly whether contraception is allowed or disallowed. The modern contraception methods have not been discovered in those days. But the Bible is sufficient to guide us. And the first case of what appeared to be contraception happened in Genesis 38. There was this man, Judah, one of the 12 sons of Jacob. He married a Canaanite woman, gave birth to 3 sons. First son died for some unspecified wickedness. The Bible doesn't tell us in what way he was wicked. So the Lord struck him to death. See? So Judah told the second son to take the brother's wife to produce children on behalf of the deceased brother. That is based on the teaching in Deuteronomy chapter 25 verse 5 to 6, what is called the Levirate marriage. The word Levirate doesn't come from the word Levi. It comes from the Latin word which means brothers. Yeah? So Levirate marriage means that in the Old Testament, there was this practice that when a brother dies, another brother will try to produce child on behalf of the brother. That means he takes the sister-in-law, as it were, as his wife, and produce children, but the children, especially the firstborn son, will be regarded as that of the deceased brother, so that the inheritance of the deceased brother will continue. Otherwise, he has no son to inherit the property. So the brother will produce a son on behalf of the deceased brother. So in that way, there will be continuity in the inheritance. But this man, Onan, he was wicked in the sense that he wants the pleasure of sexual relationship with his brother's wife, but he refused to father a child for the brother. He fears that in some ways the inheritance will be minimized, and out of selfishness, and he withdrew, have sexual intercourse, but before ejaculation, before the sperm cell is shot into the womb, he withdrew his relationship, with the result that the semen and the sperm is spilled on the ground. So God knew, that this man was wicked. So he struck him dead. Yeah. So Judah has to tell his daughter-in-law, you go and stay with your father, wait until my third son grows up, then I will consider asking him to father a child for you so that the inheritance of your husband will continue. But the point here is that Onan was wicked, not so much in the method of contraception, but in his heart, his selfishness and his rebellion, not wanting to follow the law of Moses to father a child on behalf of his brother. Yeah? So it is not so much the condemnation against his method of contraception. His type of contraception is the oldest known. And up to today, it is being practiced by those people who go after prostitutes and so on. Women who sell their bodies, they will make a condition that they will get money, of course. They demand payment each session with a man. But often they also make the condition that they must not ejaculate within her. So they have the man has to withdraw and ejaculate outside her. So that is how it is done up to today. So what we are saying then is that the Bible is silent on contraception methods. The destruction of the fertilized egg is sinful, but if the egg is not fertilized, the sperm is just sperm, the egg is just egg, it's not a human being yet. So as to the prevention of the sperm and the egg fertilizing, that is the only mention in the Bible, namely the method of withdrawal. So we will look at other types of contraception as well, but what we want to take note of is that from the Bible we know that there's no condemnation nor any encouragement to practice contraception. So we have to use these various factors we have considered to decide whether we want to have contraception or not, and what type of contraception to use, and for what period of our married life together. So in the first part, the first question is determined, do we want to have contraception or not? And for what period of time do we want to have contraception? These are the factors, these are the circumstances and factors help us to determine. But in the next section, we want to consider what type of contraception is allowable, what type is may be practiced by Christians. So let us now proceed to the second section, principles and factors affecting contraception. Now, ethically, the method of contraception should not result in the destruction of fertilized eggs, regardless of whether the eggs have attached to the wall of the womb or not. Some methods destroy the fertilized egg. And because the fertilized eggs have not had the chance to attach to the womb, the people of the world, unbelievers, will say then it is not a child yet. But for us, we don't play about with words like that, you see. For as long as the egg has been fertilized, whether it has attached to the wall yet or not, all the genetic makeup of the human being is already there. So the destruction of such a fertilized egg is actually sinful. And take note that in our study on abortion and the other related subjects, we have looked at a number of Bible passages that were relevant. But now let us just look at one, Psalm 139. You look at verse 16. Starting from verse 13, David was saying this, "For you formed," referring to God, "for you, God, formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed." Now verse 16 is significant, you see. "Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed," you see. So although the fertilized egg has not manifested body parts yet, such as eyes, hands, legs, and so on, you see, nevertheless, from this psalm, we know that that fertilized egg cell is regarded as a human being, regarded as an individual, you see. So from this psalm, verse 16, it is quite clear that you don't treat a fertilized egg as a non-human being, regardless of whether it has attached itself to the womb or not. Okay? So if there's fertilized eggs being destroyed, then that method will not be open to us. We wouldn't consider that method of contraception. But what are all those methods available? Let us look at it first. Okay? So apart from destroying the fertilized egg cell, we can quite safely say that we have to choose the method that best suits us, most comfortable for us, and also that doesn't cause unnecessary infection to us. So some methods can cause discomfort and infection, in which case then it will not be good to use. So let us look at the main methods available up to this point in the technology. In fact, I have not brought it up to the male pill, where is inserted something, a slow release type of hormone is inserted into under the skin of the man. So I have not included that. I'm aware of its existence, but it is still being developed. Okay. Now let us look at the most common methods. Now the first is coitus interruptus, which we have looked at. That is the scientific name for interrupting the sexual relationship just before ejaculation. There's withdrawal, so that the semen is spilled on the outside the body. Yeah. So this is often practiced by those who engage in illicit sex. Couples generally do not like this, as it interrupts their legitimate enjoyment of the sexual relationship. Then secondly, condoms and diaphragms. A condom is a rubber or silicone sheath used by men. Men reluctantly use it, as it reduces tactile sensitivity and cuts down pleasure. Yeah. The condom is easily available in any pharmacy or convenience store. Then what about a diaphragm? A diaphragm is a reusable dome-shaped cup which fits over the opening of the cervix of a woman. That means at the opening of the womb there, at the base of the womb. It is common to use a diaphragm with spermicide. Spermicide, what is spermicide? This is a gel, a cream, or a foam that kills sperm cell. So remember, a sperm is just a sperm, an egg is just an egg. But when fertilized, then it becomes a person. Then we wouldn't destroy the fertilized egg. Yeah? But to destroy the sperm cell or the egg cell would not involve moral issues here. So because the diaphragm is also coated with, or the diaphragm is fixed with the help of the doctor, okay? The doctor has to measure the size that fits you, because not every woman is the same, see? So the doctor has to put an equipment into you and then measure, you know, and assess what size and what type best suits you, and you recommend, see? Then he would normally fit it for you, and it will remain there for as long as you want it, unless it accidentally slips off. But generally, it remains. That is quite a good method of birth control. But often, because of the possibility that it might slip off or it might be loose or for whatever reason, so spermicide is used. In other words, you use a gel of some kind in the vagina area, and so that when the sperm cell is introduced, the sperm is killed by the spermicide. So that is double precaution. Okay. Then number three, the intrauterine device, IUD. This has been around for a long time. It is a small copper mesh inserted into the cervix, usually by a doctor. It works by releasing copper into the uterus and fallopian tubes, which acts as a spermicide. Additionally, it kills off a fertilized egg which manages to develop. This is a cruel method. So from my reading elsewhere, I seem to have read about other material being used, whereas the traditional one is copper, and the copper, the traces of the copper gets swept into the body region there, and it acts as a spermicide, you see. But when other material is used, such as artificial plastic material, it's just a mesh, a gauze that is pushed through. It functions the same way, except that the chief way of birth control is not so much the dissolving of the substance that destroys the sperm cell coming into contact with it, but rather that the mesh is there so that the sperm cell is not destroyed. The sperm cell finds the egg, fertilizes it, the egg gets attached to the wall of the womb, the egg begins to develop, and as it develops, it gets cut by the mesh that is in the way, and it dies, see. So IUD is therefore a form of abortion. It is killing the baby that is developing in the womb, see. Then the pill. Birth control pills are prescribed and taken once a day. Generally, there are two types of hormones used in the pill. So it depends on the type that you want to use. The doctors will generally recommend. The hormones in the pill stop ovulation, that means prevents this woman from producing egg cells. And so there is no egg hanging around for the sperms to fertilize. The pill's hormones also thicken the mucus on the cervix, which blocks sperm, so it can't swim to an egg. See? So the hormone in the pill causes the woman's ovary to not produce the egg. See? So no egg will come down to be fertilized. But at the same time, the hormone in the pill causes the tissue, a meshy tissue to form, so that when the sperm cell is introduced, the sperm has difficulty swimming up. The sperm is very active, it's just like a tadpole under the microscope. Yeah? Swims very fast to try to find an egg to fertilize. But because of the tissue, meshy tissue, that jelly type of tissue that is produced by the hormones, it prevents the sperm cell from swimming too fast, and therefore reducing the possibility of fertilizing the egg. Yeah. Then there is the so-called rhythm method, also known as FAM, or fertility awareness method. In this method, the previous menstrual cycles are tracked on a calendar to predict future ovulation dates. So the doctor will help you look at the past, the next few months, you know, your period, your markdown on. Last month, what date did you begin to have period, and when what date you finish? Okay, they mark out block of that period. So in the previous month, can you remember? If not, then you start recording your periods. So from recording a period over a number of months, you know the cycle, you see. Then you know that in the next month, most likely when you will have your period, see. So immediately after your period, you are not fertile, you see. But just before your period, you are very fertile, you see. So then when you are in your fertile period, then you abstain from having sexual relationship. Or if you want to have sexual relationship, some other methods have to be used. Then the husband might have to wear a condom for that period of time, or some other methods, okay? So we come to the number six, tubal ligation or envasectomy. It's often shortened to TL. To have TL means tubal ligation for the woman, and envasectomy for the man. Yeah. So tubal ligation is a permanent form of contraception or birth control in which the fallopian tubes are tied by a surgical procedure. So the ovary produces the eggs come down the fallopian tubes to the cervix area, to the womb. So the tube, the fallopian tube is clipped or tight to prevent the egg from coming down. And in that way, fertilization is not possible. And reversing the procedure is possible but expensive. And rates of conception are often decreased. So in later days, you might want to say, I decide to have another child. So you ask the doctors to untie. Untie doesn't necessarily mean that it will work, that you will have a child. Okay? So it might mean that you have to use some other methods to be pregnant again, like what we have studied in the previous study. Okay? Then vasectomy is a simple surgical procedure done in a man. It's much more simple than TL for a woman. See? And the two tubes that allow sperm to get into the semen are cut and sealed. Yeah? So what happened is that the sperm cell is produced and released through a tube to go to the sac where the liquid called the semen is. Yeah? And then during sexual intercourse, ejaculation will result in the semen being shot into the body of the woman. Yeah? Then the sperm cell, millions of them at one go, will be in that ejaculated semen. Yeah? And out of the million or so cells, only one manages to fertilize the egg cell, because each time only one egg cell is released by the woman. Okay? Now, today microsurgery is possible to reverse the procedure, although there's no guarantee. We actually know a couple who decided to reverse the vasectomy in the husband. So the husband, after one girl, the eldest was a girl, yeah? Then followed by a boy, they have both grown up. Then they yearn for a baby of their own. So the husband went for microsurgery to attach the tube again. In other words, the tube was cut and then cauterized, yeah? Cauterized bone, yeah? So that it's blocked. Huh? Okay? But they're going to cut off and then use microsurgery and join back, you see. So the husband was able to father another child. We actually met them at the clinic carrying a baby. We say, hey, whose baby? Then they told us the story. Hey, so after the two other children have grown up, you see. So that is, we find, wow, people have different ideas on this matter. So all in all, for people to have TL and for vasectomy, especially TL, you see, you mustn't regret later. And generally, if the marriage relationship is healthy one and you have arrived at the number of children you want, then after the last child, you can have the TL done, you see. Then you're all right, you're safe. You don't have to fear getting pregnant unexpectedly for the rest of your life. But sometimes marriage breakdown, you know, or something, you have only one child and then your child died in an accident, then you regret not having more children, then you want to have a child again, then you want to have the TL reverse, see, then there's no guarantee that it will work. See. Then in situations like that, you discover it is always good to have more children, although we don't want any one of our child to be missing. But take it, look at it this way, you see, whether a child dies early or late, in under whatever circumstances, all of us have to die one day. Yeah. So although it will be very painful if any of our children is taken away early, but the point is that there's comfort when there are other children around. Yeah. It will be a terrible blow if that's the only child. Yeah. So all in all, you discover that it is always good to take into consideration all these factors before you decide on permanent contraception like TL and vasectomy. Yeah. Now, last point, of all the methods here considered, the use of IUD has to be rejected as it kills off fertilized eggs. The use of the pill in between having children is often sufficient and safe until the desired number of children is achieved, when TL or vasectomy may be considered. So in other words, you have a child, then you in between, you don't want to have another child too early, you can have a contraception method such as the pill. Then you can have a child, see, then you can prevent having a child for a period of time using the pill. When you have the right number of children already, depending on how many you have decided on, yeah. So once you have achieved the number of children, you can opt to have permanent contraception like TL or vasectomy. Yeah. Those who have TL or vasectomy must guard against temptation to infidelity. This part often people overlook, and because of the ministry, I have to think along this line, you see. I interact with people talking about their problems. I actually know a Christian man who say that actually vasectomy did not affect his sexual performance, but what is troubling to him is that the temptation to be unfaithful is greater. Because he knows that he wouldn't cause anyone to be pregnant. So sometimes you see now interacting with people outside and sometimes quarrels with what the wife and things like that, you know, along the way, you see, the temptation to be unfaithful is there. So watch out about that. And similarly for the woman, but more so for the man. See? And in the write-up, you can check this up yourself on the internet, you discover the medical world and the non-Christian world just say TL or vasectomy does not prevent STD, yeah, sexually transmitted diseases. They just warn you that it does not prevent sexually transmitted disease. In other words, they already know that those who have TL and or vasectomy are generally quite loose. They go and have sexual relationship too freely. The warning is that don't think that having TL or vasectomy prevents you from sexually transmitted disease. Yeah. But from the Christian point of view, we just want to take note that if you have TL or vasectomy, be careful from this point of view, that morally you might be tempted, you fall into sin. Okay. So we are now ready to complete our study. We remember Psalm 127 again, especially verses 3 to 5, where we are reminded of the blessedness of having children. And in powerful language, that conveys across the blessedness of having children, we are told, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." So this applies and is true in any age and in any culture. And those who are not married and who are unable to have children should seek fulfillment in being spiritual parents to others. And we have to remember Matthew 19, verse 11 to 12. There are eunuchs who are born so. In other words, they cannot have children because they are born like that. But they are eunuchs because they have been caused by men to become eunuchs. So, see, in an accident or in a war, you know, where they are made eunuchs. See, but there are eunuchs for the kingdom of God's sake. In other words, there are those who are able to practice self-control, and they choose not to have children because they want to serve the Lord more wholeheartedly. Okay, so if you want to get married, you have not found the right person, and the years go by and the time comes when you really feel that maybe you have to consider being single for the rest of your life, then don't despair. Your life is still wholesome, and remember that you don't have to have children of your own, but you can be a spiritual parent to others, children and other people, see? If you have that heart, you see, to care for younger people, you discover you are possible to treat your nieces and nephews or the children in the church as it were, you know, being spiritual parents. So in that way, you will find that your life is still useful and wholesome. So with these thoughts, we come to the end of tonight's study. Are there questions or comments? I believe there's a lot of material for those who are hearing this for the first time. Read through the notes, then you slowly digest what we have covered. Then very quickly, the questions discuss the three categories of eunuchs in Matthew 19, 11 to 12. What are some practical implications? And question two, having fewer children equals quality living. So discuss, do you agree, disagree, why? And how would having too many children hinder service to God? So perhaps I should say, quote a Bible verse to support the possibility of limiting the number of children. Okay? And one passage that comes to mind is 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul say, I wish you were like me, you see. And then he goes on to explain that those who are married, they have to care for their family, but those who are not married, they don't have to care for their family. They can focus more fully on the Lord's work. So that is legitimate, therefore, for some to be eunuchs for the God's kingdom like that. They deliberately choose not to get married for God's kingdom. Some it's not by choice. They know that they prefer to get married, but circumstances prevent them from having a family. Then in which case, you are under that category as well. So from this teaching, you come to realize that you can still have a blessed, wholesome life. Okay, any comments? Any questions? Let us